This is the CFRA Live Sunday Political Panel.
806, welcome to CFRA Live. It is time for our political panel. As you heard, joining us on the phone this morning, Tasha Carradine, Principal Ag Navigator and author. Good morning, Tasha.
Good morning.
Warren Kinsella, strategist and post-media columnist as well, on the phone this morning. Good morning, Warren.
Howdy.
Howdy, howdy. And strategist at Traction Strategies, Carl Belanger, also joining us this morning. Good morning, Carl.
Morning, everybody.
Guys, we're all watching what's going on in Atlantic Canada. We've been keeping people updated throughout the morning here. The federal government did announce that it would be sending assistance. The military on standby. It's already headed to Nova Scotia. Tasha, just said the Prime Minister canceling his trip to Japan in light of this to focus on the storm. Is this the right move?
I think it is. I think that they have a devastation, not just Nova Scotia, but Newfoundland, particularly hard hit. And people, I mean, it's not just politics. I think from a human perspective, people would appreciate their Prime Minister staying close to the situation and ensuring that people are taken care of. So I think he made the right call.
Yeah, and Carl, just your thoughts on the devastation that we're seeing, and I guess the so far what we've seen from the federal government.
I mean, the response to the current crisis is fine. Like, they're doing what they need to do. We're preparing. The authorities are you know, doing the best they can. The problem is that this will happen more and more often, and it's all about the climate crisis. The North Atlantic Ocean is warming up, so these storms will be more frequent, and this is where the governments are failing us because we are not acting fast enough and strongly enough to put even a dent into the changes that we're seeing.
And we're seeing some of the devastation still. Warren, I guess, you know, is it just good that he didn't pull a Ted Cruz and head to Puerto Rico, I guess?
Yeah, it is. It's good that he canceled his trip. It's good that he called in the armed forces. And all levels of government, I think, are to be commended. They're doing well in what is considered to be the worst, the most powerful storm to ever hit this country, measured by all kinds of different metrics. And I know that for a fact personally. My daughter's in Halifax. She just moved there and a couple of weeks ago, and then we lost all contact with her. And anyway, finally, we heard from her. She called me from a Giant Tiger parking lot. Thank you, Giant Tiger. And she was okay. So the loss of life, I guess we'll know more in the coming days, but it could have been far worse than it was. And the way people are reacting is a tribute to the spirit of Atlantic Canadians.
I used to shop at that Giant Tiger in Halifax, so I'm glad she's safe, though. And I've seen some of the pictures out here, and it's just been incredible to see on that front.
Yeah.
But all the best to Atlantic Canada right now as they're dealing with that. Back to the political front this week, I guess. We did see, I don't know if it's technically new, but I guess an official opposition leader, Pierre Poilievre, kind of taking on Justin Trudeau in the House of Commons for the first time. I guess, Tasha, did you have any takeaways? Because, you know, they have sparred many times in the House of Commons before.
Well, they certainly have. I mean, and it was to be expected. This is the showdown. Maybe it wasn't as many fireworks as one might expect. I think Trudeau knew it was coming. So, you know, he had his lines ready on cryptocurrency. That's, in fact, Chrystia Freeland even started that drum before Trudeau was there on the first day when he was away because he was on foreign travel. So it's going to follow a familiar theme. And I think that this is actually what the Conservatives need to do, and Pierre Poilievre needs to hammer on economic issues. The Liberals will try and remind everyone of some of the things that he said during his campaign that people disagreed with. So it's going to be that kind of back and forth. It's almost a dialogue of the deaf in a way. You know, Trudeau did remind people of things the government, he says, has done to combat inflation. But when inflation is still as high as it is, I don't think people are going to really buy what he's saying.
Yeah, you can tell he's very proud of that cryptocurrency line, by the way, just that front. But Warren, was this, you know, I guess for lack of a better phrase, was this just, you know, Poilievre and Trudeau punching each other in the private parts for a few minutes?
Well, I know it's hard to believe, but I was young once, and when I was young, I used to prepare members of Parliament, Liberal members of Parliament, for question period. I used to write the questions. I'd prepare Mr. Chrétien for question period. I loved it. I thought it was the biggest deal. I thought it was so important. And then I get back home to Calgary, and people look at me with a blank stare.
Yeah.
Like, guys, weirdos like us love question period. Nobody else does. And, you know, proof of that is if question period and having a fine performance mattered, Joe Clark would have been prime minister for more than 9 months. and Thomas Mulcair would have become prime minister. Question, period, and House of Commons performance, as sad as it is, does not matter. So what's going to matter is how these two guys face off on the hustings, and that's some distance off yet.
Carl, I guess to Warren's point, was this only just, you know, theater for political watchers, or do you think this will have a dent in people's perception of either leader?
No, it won't make much of a difference. Warren is right. It was political theater, not very good one at that. It was like watching high school debate club with two guys who do not sound genuine when they're performing. Their lines are rehearsed, and they're delivering them, and it sounds forced, and you know, this is not where people are going to change their mind if they change their mind. In fact, I thought it was a bit underwhelming. And perhaps there was so much hype about this, you know, confrontation for the ages that when you're looking at it, you're like, meh, you know, nothing we've never seen before.
Yeah, it certainly lacks substance on that front. I guess just a follow-up, Carl, in a sense of, you know, Polyev has been the opposition leader before. Did you get any sense of a difference between Polyev as opposition leader as opposed to the leader of the House of Commons?
It's the same guy. I mean, it's the same kind of approach to it. I certainly don't sense that there's suddenly any kind of gravitas coming with the character. Perhaps he was a little more subdued than people would have expected because he did some great stuff when he was just an opposition member hitting really hard. But frankly, I didn't sense any difference.
And we'll see how that, I guess, relationship kind of turns the corner on that front. Another issue facing the Trudeau government this week, and they've been staying mum on this, but it has been reported from government sources that it sounds like vaccination requirements at the border will be lifted at the end of the month with the latest expiration date on this. Now, Trudeau says they've been following the science on this, and they'll have more to say at some other point. But I guess politically, you've got the union here representing border guards, the travel industry, travelers all kind of pushing for these restrictions to be lifted and the ArriveCan app to be lifted. Tasha, does the government really have a choice here but to kind of lift these restrictions or ease them to some extent?
Well, as you said, there's a lot of pressure coming from different quarters. Even so far as, you know, professional athletes who can't compete. And I think that it's the what people are feeling is a fatigue. There's a general fatigue in the population. There's a sense that, you know, COVID, we've had multiple waves of COVID. There are vaccinations available and people can get them and people still get COVID. And so this has unfortunately now become the song of like, oh, it doesn't matter. Well, it still does matter. Frankly, it does matter. But with the variants that are out there, I'm not 100% sure what the science at this point is. I actually would like the government to explain exactly why the rationale is for the decision. I think the ArriveCan app was long overdue to be scrapped simply because it was not working properly. And, you know, people should have an option, I think, of filling out their paperwork online in general when they cross the border. But this was not functional. So to decide to do this now, in the context we're in, but I hope we don't have another wave in the fall that reverses the decision. But we will have to wait and see. You know, pandemics take years to stamp out. It's not like it's over, unfortunately. I wish it were, but it's not over until it really is over.
And it has been the wait-and-see pandemic on that front. I guess two separate issues, too, to your point as well, the ArriveCan app and the vaccine requirements. But Warren, is there really any other choice with the pressure facing the Trudeau government right now?
No, but like I want to say I agree with every single word that Tasha said, and I wish, you know, people paid attention to it. You know, politics is like comedy. It's all about timing. And, you know, I understand the pressure the government was under to scrap this app, because even though it didn't cost that much to produce, you know, compared to other government programs, it wasn't working in the way that it was intended. So they're scrapping it at the exact time that colds are coming back, flus are coming back, and we've got a whole bunch of new COVID variants heading our way, and we're going to be importing them into the country. And I don't think the Liberals or the Conservatives are going to look terribly good on it for calling for the scrapping of the app that may have assisted us in you know, preventing some of that from happening. So I think the timing is all wrong, but I agree with everything that Tasha said.
Yeah, Carl, is it, I guess it's just kind of politics at this front with the pressure, or are they going to regret this further on down the line, do you think?
I'm not sure they're going to regret this, but, you know, throughout the pandemic, what we've seen is governments around the world claiming they were following the science and coming up with different measures. That's why I guess the science was different from one country to another. And that's been the problem, right? And, you know, I don't believe for a second that the science is dictating that we need to scrap the ArriveCan app. Like, there's no such thing. Frankly, I think it's a matter of understanding that COVID is here to stay, and then you can have restrictions and discrepancies, and those restrictions show that there's no real agreement on what the science says about it, and therefore governments are slowly lining up with the rest of the world and lifting restrictions, and they're not coming back. Nobody's bringing them back. It's not going to happen. We've turned the page on that, despite the number of people who are still dying from that disease.
Yeah, the science has been very convenient for many politicians around the world on that front.
Yeah.
One other topic I wanted to get to this week on a couple of different fronts, but the ongoing situation in Ukraine. Obviously, a draft has been called this week by Russian President Vladimir Putin, 300,000 reservists, many Russians trying to flee this draft. I saw one of the top searches on Google in Russia on Friday, was how to break your arm. So clearly not many people willing to fight on this front. We'll start, Warren, your initial concerns about the escalations that we're seeing there.
Yeah, so he has called up 300,000 reservists, many of whom are older, many of whom have never seen any military training whatsoever. His legislature, which is just full of trained SEALs, making it an act of treason to voluntarily surrender to the Ukrainians. Like, I'm no military strategist, guys, but I don't think his war is going very well. You know, there's increasingly suggestion that he is isolated. There's even been a report yesterday in the New York Times that he, the politician with no military experience, you know, he was a spy before, is directly giving instructions to the military in the battlefield, a politician. That's not a good idea. So I think the war is not going particularly well for him. I think that we should disregard the advice of people like Macron to say, you know, don't torment the Russian bear, don't humiliate them. You know, this is why Putin makes these statements about using, you know, the bomb, using nukes, is to produce that kind of reaction in the West. I don't think we should fall for that. He's done it before. I don't think he is going to use nukes. I think the war is being won by the Ukrainians, and we should keep supporting them.
Yeah, just further to your point, seeing reports of soldiers in Adidas shoes as well this week. So clearly not very great for some soldiers on the front line as well. I guess, Carl, are you concerned about the increased rhetoric that we're seeing here from Vladimir Putin, and including, as Warren mentioned, some threats of using nukes as well?
Yes, I am concerned because, despite the fact that people think that he's not going to use it, the truth is that we don't know. And he's got the buttons, and he's a madman, and he's losing a war, and he wants to save face or show the world that he's tougher than the rest of them. And so, yes, I am concerned. I think haven't been since the 80s. Closer to any kind of nuclear holocaust than we are because of this current conflict. These kinds of threats you haven't heard from Putin when he went into Georgia, when he went into all kinds of other places in recent years. But in Ukraine, they're coming up because he's losing that war. And so, yes, I think it's concerning, but we can't back down, because if we do, then who's next? And that's the key question.
And just kind of on the Georgia point as well, you know, votes underway in four different regions, sham votes essentially to, annex parts of Ukraine to Russia as well. But Tasha, as you're watching this, you know, escalate over the course of the last week for the Russian people and the Russians, just any thoughts or concerns?
Well, are with the Russians who are protesting within their own country, and you see 1,300 people, I think, have been detained across the country. It's not just protests in Moscow, they're protesting in towns in Siberia, they're protesting all over the country, because they know exactly this, that this war is, first of all, should never have been waged, and second, he's losing it. Ukrainians have been sitting back with, of course, the aid of the West, but the point is that this was not a winnable proposition. It wasn't something they were going to just roll in and do, as Putin claimed, in a matter of weeks or months. It's dragging on. The Russian people are suffering sanctions. I think this is the biggest danger, obviously, to him is from people. This is the only thing I think that's bringing him down. And so I, you know, wholeheartedly stand with them. That is that they're very brave to stand up against him because it is, you know, a horrible day for a madman, as Warren said. It is a situation that we're facing again, unfortunately, with a country with a history of tyrannical, you know, leaders. And he's exactly in that mold. So we have to stay for, yes, support the Russian people 100% or protest his team.
And I guess the other question that's at play is that the European Union is seeing on how to deal with all these Russian refugees and to have kind of a resolute and kind of standard way to process them as they also, you know, flee Russia. There's been economic hardship for months now, but now the draft also coming in, causing people to flee. I guess, Carl, we'll start with you. There has been some pushback about accepting Russian refugees, but Canada has left the door open. Is that a stance that we should be continuing moving forward?
I think so. I mean, I understand when the Prime Minister of Estonia says, you know, I don't want to get Russians here because they're responsible for what Putin is doing, and they, you know, they bear responsibility. I disagree with that, but I understand the sentiment in the sense that, you know, if too many Russians go to Estonia, maybe Russia will look at Estonia and say, we need to go there to protect those Russians, right?
Right.
So I totally understand. Not the case for Canada. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that is if a lot of Russians leave the country, that's a plus because that means resources, that means money, that means people who are no longer available in helping Putin's efforts. And in that sense, I think it should happen because they are living effectively in a dictatorship. And when people flee a dictatorship, we should welcome them.
Yeah, just Warren, as I mentioned, you know, this has been a topic of debate mostly in the European Union, but the Canada's stance of accepting Russian refugees, is this something we should be keeping up moving forward as they continue to deal with the hardships of war as well?
I don't think we should overreact. I mean, if you look at, you know, a flight 2 weeks ago from Russia to Turkey was about $900. It's now 9,000. And I would imagine at some point that Putin is going to clamp down on passage through border crossings into places outside of Russia. So, you know, I don't know if this is going to be a flood in the way that we've seen other refugee migrations. The one thing I will say is that I thought that the Canadian government did a good job. When ISIS fell apart and there was anxiety about, you know, former ISIS militants and terrorists, you know, because Russia really has devolved into a terrorist state as well, showing up in our country and causing mayhem and destruction. I think the Canadian government handled that quite well. We really didn't have that problem. So I would, you know, if this turns into a sufficient number that we need to pay close attention to it, I hope the Canadian government applies the same kind of standard.
Yeah, and screening was also an issue for Afghan refugees as well, and clearly there has been no issues so far as, you know, we've welcomed thousands into the country. Tasha, just a last word to you. Is this a stance we should be continuing, you know, welcoming Russian refugees who are also kind of victims of Vladimir Putin's war as well?
Well, I think the key is, yeah, if they're victims of the war and not just fleeing for other reasons. And some countries actually are asking in Europe, you know, to sign a pledge to say that they reject Putin and that's why they're leaving the country. They're in a very different situation, too, because, you know, the experience in Ukraine is that exactly that. You had a lot of Russians in certain parts of it, which then Russia said, oh, they should be ours. So Estonia, Latvia, all the other countries from the former Soviet Union, they don't want to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of Russians settling within their borders. I can understand that. Canada's not in that situation. We are, you know, much further flung. And, yes, it'll be more difficult for people to get here. So I think we should continue to process people as refugees, and they have to prove then exactly that, that they are, in fact, legitimately fleeing for those reasons. They would be persecuted if they stayed at home, and one of the persecutions would be that they would be sent to fight a war that is unjust, wrong, and that they don't want to do.
Yeah, and we'll leave it there for this week. But Tasha Carradine, Warren Kinsella, Carl Boulanger, thanks so much for all of you for your thoughts this week. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Carl Boulanger, strategist, attraction strategies. Warren Kinsella, columnist, liberal strategist. Tasha Carradine, principal and navigator and author as well. We thank them so much for their time. Your thoughts, 580-580. You can text us. You can also tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. You can tweet me as well at @A_Pinsent. You can also send us an email. Of course, I'm just forgetting what the email address is right now. No, it's cfralive@bellmedia.ca if you wanted to send a note your way this way as well. We'll get to those closer to the end of the show. We'll take a quick break here. Newscast coming up. On the other side, we'll also bring you up to date the latest news coming out of Atlantic Canada this morning. News continuing coverage as well on CTV News Channel, I should mention as well. Stories of the fallout of post-tropical storm Fiona, which is now making its way into southeastern Quebec this morning. That's what they're dealing with this morning. High winds and rain. We'll talk about that coming up after the break. This is CFRA Live.
You are listening to CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Alone, welcome back to CFRA Live. I'm Andrew Pinson with you until the top of the hour. Continuing to follow the recovery efforts that are now underway in Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, PEI, and New Brunswick to a lesser extent, but still. From post-tropical storm Fiona, it's making its way into southeastern Quebec this morning. They're dealing with rains and high winds as well. Thousands of people across the Maritimes still without power. Now, the province of New Brunswick is expecting to have most people back on the grid tonight. So that's the good news out of Atlantic Canada. But Cape Breton, towns on Cape Breton and in Newfoundland, particularly Port of Basque, have declared states of emergency. So they're going to be needing some help for the days to come as Port of Basque just ripped apart by a storm surge that hit that area. Videos online showing complete homes just swept out to sea. And as I've been saying this morning, we still have no reports of any injuries, major injuries or deaths to this point. But the big caveat being is that emergency officials have not been able to reach some of these areas. So we hope for the best, as of course we do. Fingers crossed that everybody can walk away because no power. Some people have lost their homes. Other people have lost other things. So if we could limit the damage, that would be fantastic. But Tim Houston is the mayor of Nova Scotia. The premier of Nova Scotia, rather. I was thinking about the mayor of Cape Breton there for a sec. But premier of Nova Scotia, Tim Houston, saying that part of the problem in getting these emergency messages out is that three quarters of the province is without power. So they're doing the best that they can right now.
The sad reality is that the people who need the information that most of the team, most of the folks on this call today can share are unable to hear it. Their phones aren't working. They don't have power or access to the internet. So I want to assure you that working together, we have to do everything we can to make sure that we communicate with the people that need the information.
This is Premier Tim Houston speaking to the problems that Nova Scotia is facing right now. They say they will continue to try to get messages and get messages out as best they can. In Cape Breton, as I mentioned, still dealing with the fallout with some of the damage there. Here's Cape Breton's mayor, Amanda McDougall.
We are going to have our partners through the Department of National Defense coming out to help with some removal of the trees and different debris that is out on the roads. Right now, a partnership is happening between Member 2. We're moving all of the folks who have been evacuated to Member 2 Trade and Convention Center. In addition, working towards the Coast Guard. Right now, it's about making sure those who are in dire need are getting the support that they require.
And the federal government has approved a request for assistance from the military for Nova Scotia, and will deploy the Canadian Armed Forces to help in any other place that needs it. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says the military is prepared for similar requests from other Atlantic provinces that have been pummeled by the storm.
We already have begun to mobilize resources, so if and when requests come in from other provinces, we will be able to rapidly not just say, yes, we'll do it, but, and here it is already. So that's the focus that we've taken.
And just moments ago, the Prime Minister's itinerary coming out as well. It says here that he will be in the National Capital Region today, chairing a meeting of the Incident Response Group on Hurricane Fiona and Post-Tropical Storm Fiona. So the federal government focused on that response here today that it says as well. Is this cleanup expected to take days? And getting power to many residents expected to take days as well. PEI also hit hard by this as well. Here was one man speaking about the damage on the streets of PEI.
I'm seeing some devastation that I didn't think would happen. You know, it's incredible what a storm will do. And this is my first severe hurricane, but nothing like this. Nothing like this.
And some of the pictures still up on the CTV News Channel as well. Coverage continuing as well if you wanted to tune on the TV as well throughout the morning here on the CTV News Channel as well. We'll keep you up to date throughout the morning here. I wanted to mention another federal story as well. Any of your texts following up on our federal politics discussion, but I thought this was a very interesting discussion or story this morning. Speaking of the armed forces, Canadian Armed Forces sounding the alarm as it's dealing with a severe shortage of new recruits to fill thousands of vacant positions within the ranks. The shortfall so bad that the senior officer responsible for managing military recruitment and training is describing it as a crisis. Brigadier General Krista Brody, says that the military is getting only about half the number of applicants that it needs to meet its goal of adding 5,900 service members to the ranks this year. So already about 1 in 10 military positions are currently unfilled, and this means that there's fewer people to rise through the ranks and fill leadership roles later on as well. So officials say they're trying to better understand the problem and working on potential solutions. Some of those have included financial incentives as well, including other ways as well to improve work-life balance and improving public perceptions of the military. That's been a story that's been 4 or 5 years in the making here with some of the culture issues surrounding the Canadian military as well. It also says it's trying to recruit from underrepresented groups like women and Indigenous peoples as well. So that's another story in the news this morning. Another one we were talking about this week, latest on the campaign trail, advanced voting is underway. I wanted to mention that as well here in Ottawa. Mentioned it earlier, but if you're just tuning in, day two now of 4 days of a planned advance voting here in Ottawa ahead of our October 24th municipal election. I wanted to find these 9 polling locations, but advance polls opened yesterday. They're also open today, Monday and Tuesday, from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. And there's 9 different places to cast votes over the next 3 days. And regardless of your address, you can go to any of these 9 locations. There's a full list at ctvnewsottawa.ca. But just a quick rundown, Francis Dupuis Recreation Center, St. Laurent Complex, City Hall, Greenboro Community Center, Minto Recreation Complex, Nepean Sportsplex, Michelle Heights Community Center, Ridgecraft Recreation Complex, and the Cardle Rec Recreation Complex in Goulburn as well. So you can cast your ballot today, Monday, or Tuesday, ahead of the October 24th municipal election if you've already decided who you want to vote for. There are more advanced voting days coming up. I should mention that as well. Just wanted to find out when they are. Those are on October 7th and 14th, but for those ones, you'll have to go to a designated polling location that's within your riding. So there will be 2 more days of advanced polling on October 7th and 14th, but it will be riding specific. So the 9 that are open this weekend, that's your best bet if you're out and about to cast your votes already. If you need to. So that means campaign well underway. We heard a lot about that this week. I'm joined by producer Mitch Kudrowski. Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning.
We were talking a little bit earlier just about, you know, voter turnout in the provincial election. Mm-hmm. You know, there has been a lot of, excitement around Catherine McKenney as a candidate that we've seen. And to a lesser extent, Mark Sutcliffe as well. This seems like a two-dog race, but it just seems, we see that the McKenney supporters are very supportive.
Very vocal.
Very vocal. That's a very good way to put it. Just on that front, in terms of, I guess, mobilizing your base to get out and vote, is that going to be the key here? Because we were talking about earlier, 43% was the turnout for the provincial election, a historic low.
Abysmal.
Which is awful. Yeah. That's just awful. And we were talking about earlier, too, because we had a lot of people who voted against Doug Ford on that front, right? Very upset because of that lack of turnout, right? But that's just... It's first past the post. That's how it works. And, you know, we can flip it federally and say, you know, the federal Liberals got less votes than all of the other parties, including the Conservative Party got more votes than the Liberal Party in the last election, but did not form government. Minority government was formed. So it works out in both ways, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But municipal campaigns are very interesting because there is no party affiliation. So you don't get the automatic red versus blue votes on that front. But just do you think people will... You know, be motivated. Are we going to beat 43%? I guess is my big question.
I think so. I think absolutely we're going to.
It's not a great standard, but
43% is a very low bar.
Like, I'm thinking, no, like, think you know, like 65, I would be like, you know, I wish it was 100%. I wish people would 65. Understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we talk about freedom a lot, right? I wish people would understand the just the places around the world where we don't have the freedom and the democratic right to vote, right? And that aspect. So just wish that people would understand.
Yeah. No, I'll never.
How important it is. But people also have busy lives.
When I lived in Vietnam for a while, and it's a like a communist government, they have like a sort of like an electoral process, but it's kind of it's not what we see here. And I was voted from the embassy, and all my friends there who I was talking to about it were like, "Oh, you're gonna go vote from the embassy," and I think we take it for granted here that we can do this. And
actually, I'm very impressed with your own.
Yeah.
Investment in democracy on that front. I don't know if I was traveling internationally, if I would. I guess it depends on what's at play, but yeah.
No, good for you. I think like it's so pointless why people don't do it, but there's also so many things that get in the way of casting your ballot. For example, work.
Like life gets in the way. I understand that aspect of it. It gets hard, right? Well, and even in the the politics, right? We're a little more just like plugged in because we find it interesting, right? And we kind of follow it on a day-to-day basis. But I know that's not everybody, right? A lot of people will ask you about something that, you know, maybe happened in government like 3 months ago. And it's just like, where have you been, man? But actually, I just want to point, Kristen Seth Dundas had a very good joke this morning. Good morning, advanced polling stations work great. I voted 4 times this weekend.
So that's funny. But yeah, there's so many things that get in the way of voting that I think young people definitely experience. For example, like working weird hours. Also, if you're young people tend to be renting, so don't necessarily have a concrete sort of thing to prove where you live in your neighborhood. So I know a lot of young people who aren't necessarily from Ottawa but have been living here, and in theory, all you need to do is just show your lease or whatever.
Yeah, but, a piece of mail
or something. But it's just another sort of thing that can make it a hassle, so.
A barrier. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, we've seen it. You know, it's become much more politicized in the U.S. Right, just voter ID laws and things like that, gerrymandering and things like that. So, I feel that it has become more of an issue there, just because the issue is just insanely politicized, just on the front of all these fake votes that don't exist.
This culture of election fraud.
Yeah, that's suddenly popped up. I don't know. It's crazy, but. It's a little more intense there on that front because, it is, you know, very open here. There's very few barriers. You just have to, you know, if you have a piece of mail and you live here, right, you can go and register as an elector and you can cast your ballot. It's pretty simple. And I think the fewer barriers that we put in place, right, is probably for the best in terms of getting people to vote. But I think a large majority as well is it's the youth vote, right? Yeah. And, you know, we joke about you know, the 18 to 25 is not really caring or voting. When they do care, they're always going to vote for the NDP or the furthest left party, right? That's the common joke as well. But, you know, a lot of people aren't also engaged at that age as well. So it's a large swath of the population that isn't voting. We can give it that, but it's also not 57% of the population that didn't vote in the provincial election.
I mean, of all the young people that I'm like friends with and talk to, like, it all seems like they're really into this election and really want to vote. But then again, I also, my friends probably are more politically active than your average 20 somethings. But
that's the other thing too.
Young people are politically active nowadays though.
I also find it interesting just because we work in this job as well is that some people are passionate about politics, right? But some people are passionate about a candidate or a particular idea.
Or identity.
And it's very hard to kind of skew away from that, right? Whereas since they're only into politics for this one person, right? As opposed to the bigger conversation. I mean, any way we get people into politics, that's great. And if you've inspired somebody to get into politics, like good for you, right?
Yeah.
In terms of turning over the next generation. But yeah, it's also tough on that front too, because, you know, it's not really a balanced conversation, right?
No.
That's also first past the post. That's just how it works. I guess municipal politics, not so much, but this one, it looks like it's just going to come down to a 2-horse race. I just hope, for the sake of everybody, that we can do better than 43% voter turnout. I challenge you, Ottawa. Actually, Chris is already doing well. He's at like 400% this morning.
Yeah, he's going to single-handedly bring it up.
He's going to bring in our voter turnout. Thank you, Mitch. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to more of your texts as well on this issue. We'll wrap up the show. This is CFRA Live. I'm Andrew Pinson with you until 9 o'clock this morning.
You are listening to CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
856, welcome back. It's only a couple minutes left here, but I wanted to get to another text from Chris in South Dundas. A good quote from Winston Churchill here, you know, tempered with the fact that Mr. Churchill himself was a vehement conservative. But Winston Churchill says, if you're not a liberal at age 25, you're heartless. If you aren't a conservative by 40, you're brainless. Winston Churchill, powerful speaker. Just talking off the air with Mitch. He's, I guess, quickly here because we only have like a minute. John Lithgow did an amazing, amazing performance as Winston Churchill.
Yeah, it's a good performance because it's, I feel like he's a bit looser, right? I mean, if you know how much Churchill drank, you definitely think that he would be a bit looser than a lot of the more rigid performances.
He definitely picked up on that, too, yeah. That aspect of his character as well. That was the miniseries. What was that, Queen Elizabeth's miniseries?
Was that in the
Crown.
The Crown, right. Yeah,
Crown. Yeah, that was fantastic. So there's a free plug for The Crown to wrap up the show. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you to Mitch Kudrowski and to Stephen Ellsworth for everything that you heard today. And just to tee up next weekend, it's Truth and Reconciliation Day on Friday, September 30th is Friday, so we'll be on the air with a special CFRA Live edition on Friday, so stay tuned for that. Until next time, Ottawa, stay safe and be well.
Thanks.
They have